Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, and we were one of six people, either in person or on the phone, for a 45-minute thereabouts press conference with Marcus Freeman. We had done this previously, Tim, in late May. It was decided earlier this summer that maybe closer to training camp end of summer would be the time to do so. Today was our 45-minute segment. There are other websites that had a 45-minute segment after us, so we encourage you to follow ours first, and then thereafter, go ahead and pick up theirs as well. But they will have, I do point that out, Tim, because we had a different conversation than they will have, obviously, with head coach Marcus Freeman. And we're not going to be able to tell them everything we talked about today, because I wrote down during the, not a press conference, during the meeting with Freeman, 21 topics. I think we'll try to hit a little bit fewer than that right now. But we went around the room, and Tim Priester, I want to start with you, because you started us off. Your second question was regarding something our fans really want to hear about here. Notre Dame's recruiting uptick of late, but a top 150 players across the board. But really, you were mentioning defensive tackle.
Yeah, and I didn't want them to.
And can't say names. So you
no,
have
exactly.
To kind of lead him into. The
yeah, I talked. I talked about the six defensive linemen that they're probably going to have commitments from, with one coming up this Thursday. And you know, I mean, again, he's so good. One of the things that came to mind, I wanted to save this to you guys here now. Like, I wish Notre Dame fans could sit in on something like that. And just, I know they love him, and I know that he handles virtually every situation he's in with great style. But I think Notre Dame fans would love to hear some of those conversations, because just so genuine, and he seems to mean everything that he says. And that's why he's having success, or that's a large part of why he's having success. But yeah, I asked him about, you know, I mean, obviously they're spending more money on athletes. You have Mike Martin, you have the general manager, you have the whole setup in place. But, you know, he talked about that once they get them on campus, they've got a great shot, and they weed out, you know, they generally know before a kid comes to visit whether he's a fit for Notre Dame or not. And
I thought the interesting thing, Tim, was he mentioned during conversations, if you bring up school, if you bring up campus, if you bring up things unique to Notre Dame and they don't respond,
then you know,
start picking up the phone a little bit less.
And a lot of times, you know, that before they've even visited. And that's probably the best case scenario. But, you know, I thought the key point there was that these recruits, they've now seen Notre Dame do it. You know, before it was their parents telling them, no, Notre Dame was great, won the national title 38 years ago. They have no perspective on that. But they've actually seen Notre Dame have success. Last year, certainly, especially 2024, when they made the run through the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's fine-tuned the process because he's so good at that. He talked about self-scouting. We can get into that maybe a little bit more. But, like, And that came up with regard to second game of the season where they've struggled.
I asked him about September, not necessarily the second game, but they've
right.
Lost every September. And
right. But
I mentioned, you know, were you in charge of the self-scout? Who was in charge of the self-scout? And his answer was, there's not a person in this building not in charge of the self-scout. And, you know, you would say, well, that's an exaggeration. That's coach speak. Except he talked about the training staff, the nutrition.
Everybody in organization, the people from Sports Info that were sitting in the room with us, they were asked to self-evaluate.
Yeah, they were asked to figure out, all right, what's wrong? Obviously, he's going to listen to his coordinators and strength and conditioning and nutrition more than the media relations people. But it was basically seen as a scourge on Notre Dame that they lose every September. They lose every September. I know one was Ohio State. But one was Northern Illinois. One was Marshall. So, like, you could say these things. And he mentioned opponents, and it can't be an excuse opponents. I know they lost to Ohio State when they should have won, but it was yet another loss in September. So it is relevant to get out of it. We keep saying they won't lose in September, Tim, because they don't play anybody. That's not his approach for his football team and his football program right now. They're not, you know, they didn't play anybody when they lost to Northern Illinois either. And they lost to Marshall. So this
No,
is,
that's true. But
I'm
but
glad
I
he answered that question so,
yeah.
So honestly.
I was too. And I like, we've talked about this a little bit during the off season. I've kind of pushed it aside because A, I know those teams aren't very good, but B, I also know that he does a tremendous job of learning from their mistakes. Now, you know, the September thing has been consistent pattern with 4 years. I get that. Last year, a little bit different, obviously playing a tough game on the road and then just needing to make a play at
but
the end
of
the
they lost them both. You know,
right.
You
exactly.
You lost them
exactly.
Both.
You yeah. lost them yeah. both. So, Yeah, that was the first thing that stuck out to me. And my question about the recruiting part of it, I have no doubt that they're bringing the right players through Notre Dame now, getting them on visits. And NIL said the money that Notre Dame now is spending on student athletes is much greater. And we've talked about, you know, rank, what are the reasons why they're getting these defensive linemen? It may very well be the money that they've spent on the defensive linemen, but he's also cultivated a culture that puts him over the top and, you know, resonates with the parents. And that's why, you know, you can imagine Parks is going to make a decision this Thursday, but let's just say in general, a recruit that isn't sold by Notre Dame, but you can imagine that mom is, and you can imagine how frustrating it is for her when, you know, you let your son make a decision and it's not Notre Dame, because if you're a parent and you come to a weekend visit with Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman, I don't know how you don't come away from that weekend extremely impressed.
There weren't many player questions, obviously, because Marcus isn't the type to sit there and dwell on players. But one or two questions were about CJ Carr. And the one I found interesting was later, Tim, in the session where Pete Sampson chimed in asking about if CJ Carr is more similar to Marcus than any of his previous quarterbacks. And I thought right away, I was like, well, you know, Riley Leonard would be next in line for that. And Freeman mentioned I have similarities with all the guys that have started here. But what I liked him saying about CJ Carr is his example of his competitiveness and his ultra competitiveness and how he wants to be great is, you know, a lot of guys, when they lose, Tim, get pissed no matter what it is. CJ Carr, his mention was, if you lose a wiffle ball game or you lose a pickleball game or ping pong, he will spend the next 2 days practicing that to try to beat you and try to challenge you again. And that's the level of competition CJ Carr brings to the program. It's what Riley Leonard brought to the program too, and I think it's relevant because he helped carry them to their best season in 30 years, Riley Leonard, with his level of leadership and competition. And CJ Carr is ahead of the game in that regard as a junior.
Ahead of the game in ways that I don't like. Can you think of another quarterback that is just so absolutely dialed in to the extent that he is? I know you will think of somebody.
No, because I was thinking of talented players. And I mean, Riley Leonard wasn't dialed in like that. He even said he was he's a great leader. Riley Leonard's one of the best leaders the last 30 years. But the way CJ Carr is, as a junior too, Tim, I mean, he has 12 games under his belt, zero postseason games. And I believe that he is the leader and captain of the team.
Yeah. Can you imagine him playing through 2028?
Right.
Which he has.
No, he won't.
Which he has. No, I know he won't. But but I mean, the level of leadership now, and he still has all this time left. I thought it was pretty funny that he said, well, you know, I'm like, and he mentioned Sam Hartman too. He said, I'm like all of those guys. And then, you know, CJ's not an exact comparison to him, Marcus himself, because he's like, well, you know, he's from Michigan. I'm from Ohio, which says a lot about Michigan versus Ohio State. But
yeah, it brought that up out of nowhere, you mean?
Right. Yeah. It struck me. One of the things I wrote down, and you guys, Jack may remember better than you, Tim, but what was the commercial where they say, well, this is what I wrote down. When CJ Carr talks, people listen. What was the commercial? What was that? Were they selling? Yeah. EF Hutton. Thank you. That's what it's like. Okay. He's a leader on this team because when CJ Carr talks now, the team is listening to him, especially the offensive side of the ball.
One player update we should get with, as Irish Illustrated has reported recently and throughout the spring, Charles Jaugisa was asked about. John Stiers asked about Charles Jaugisa's health. Marcus Freeman mentioned. Really, the goal for Jaugisa is to be able to play football this year. We hate to use the word reported. We discussed that on our message board a month ago. I had heard right after on our podcast hearing some bad news. I heard good news, brought it to our message board. Marcus Freeman kind of confirmed it. He will not be ready to start the season. The goal is to get Jaugisa back. He's just had a hell of a go of it. And they do believe he could play this season. But for people wondering, you know, I think he got the miracle of it. Like Charles Jaugisa all of a sudden was the best guard in the country when he came back after not playing guard for 1 week against Penn State. That's not how it's going to go this time. He'll need a little bit more time coming back. So that's kind of really the only relevant injury update. This is not a meeting for injuries and discussion about third string tight ends and stuff like that. But that's, I'm glad Sean asked that because I actually thought it might be off limits, Jaugisa's health, but it was good that Freeman was able.
Yeah, the exact quote was he will play football this season, but not at the start. So
not at the start.
Yeah, so that's really open ended, and that, you know, again, I continue to underestimate the schedule, but it looks like you have enough cushion there that you can fully sure that, you know, Jaguars has all the preseason camp and then, you know, through September to get himself prepared.
No mention of backup quarterbacks, of course, because we're not going to be naming backup quarterbacks if you're Marcus Freeman right now. But I asked him about the process because it's unique. Last year, their backup quarterback, they had total faith in to be the starter. The year before, they had Steve Angeli, total faith in to be able to come in and right the ship as needed. I mean, also you had Minshew and CJ Carr the year before, too. So unique situation for Gadooly. He'll have an inexperienced, completely inexperienced quarterback. And Freeman kind of noted, Tim, what I think most reasonable people can surmise, but I'm glad he said it out loud. They have to name a backup quarterback for week one. That's right. Not your backup quarterback for 2026.
Right. You don't have to name, like, you know, essentially, last year when they named Carr, he named the second team guy. So, but, you know, obviously circumstances are very different, but when, you know, when it's time to start moving forward, he will be announcing the second string quarterback and not the first string quarterback.
Yes. And at that point, the second string quarterback is the quarterback for week one, maybe because he had the best August 10 through 17, and that's who they trust. But then you get into, do we keep up two off the scout team because we have to teach them? But you need CJ Carr to rep with all receivers. And I know people can say CJ Carr doesn't have to rep with his receivers. Yes, he does. There's mostly new receivers for CJ Carr, including one of his best ones in Mylon Graham. He absolutely needs to rep. He's thrown Jaden Greathouse 8 passes in football, in a college football game.
Quincy Porter even more.
Yeah. So CJ Carr, you know, I don't want to put a number on it because different quarterback coaches have said different things, but you're about 70% of the snaps in game week, maybe higher, for CJ Carr. So how do you divvy them up and how do you find that backup quarterback? But it's just, it is not a August thing other than for week one, which makes total sense. So I think when you see that first depth chart come out, that's your backup for week one.
He was also asked, you know, how he's different now that he's 4 years into this. And the quote, you learn to trust people. And I mean, Marcus Freeman empowers the people around him. There's no doubt that he's the guy that makes the decision, but he absolutely empowers people around him. And I think, you know, when you add up all the things as to why they're 24-4 in the last 2 years and they've made progress to where, and they're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. Everybody, the whole country expects them to be good. I think learning to trust the people around you and empowering them is a very powerful thing within your organization.
Actually, that was had we had 3 more minutes come back around, my question was going to be, when did you learn to trust Mike Martin? Because not that Mike Martin's not trustworthy, the general manager didn't exist when Marcus Freeman took this job. And his general manager was his recruiting coordinator at first. Now Mike Martin's in charge of saying, no, I'm sorry, there's no money for him. The money's going somewhere else. You got to trust Mike Martin. Marcus Freeman can't say, no, that's okay. Just take more money and give it to this guy. That's why you have Mike Martin. That's got to be hard to do for a college football coach.
Well, I think conversations are more difficult just in general because of the money. He mentioned about, you know, guys that could be fifth year guys, you know, 5-for-5 guys next year. You know, those can be difficult conversations, or fifth year guys that, hey, I want to come back for a fifth year. Sorry, we can't do that. So these conversations, because of NIL, are even more extensive than they used to be.
You mentioned one thing about the 5-for-5 situation is because the rule passed, a major benefit is on September 30th or whatever week 4 is this year, there's no conversation with anybody's agent. You don't have to talk about telling the agent, hey, man, my guy wants to sit out week 5. Can you sit him week 5? Because a head coach doesn't want to do that. But it is absolutely in the player's best interest sometimes to sit out week 5 and see if he wants to remain part of the team. So you don't have to have the agent conversation. And he mentioned there's no red shirts. I don't have to have the red shirt conversation. I don't have to say to you, you're not playing because we want to preserve this year of eligibility. I can just say, you're not ready to play yet. That's why you're not playing. If you're ready to play in November or October, I'll play you.
Think about on the surface, like if you didn't know anything about the game, on the surface, you have guys on the roster, but we can't play them. You know,
wait till November 1st to play them.
Right. Right. Because he can play 4 games now, you know, and he talked about that a little bit, that you need freshmen. There are times where you just need freshmen, and think about how many times that they've hesitated, maybe not so much at their regular position, offense or defense, but on special teams, there are guys that stand out that are better athletes that have a feeling for it. And so after, you know, maybe they win a job on special teams in September, but they want to save them, so they have to sit them for the rest of the year. Yeah. because they want to preserve that year of eligibility. So just on the surface, the thought of, hey, I got guys on the roster, but I can't play them, seems kind of silly if you didn't understand the machinations of the sport.
The very brief era of playing one special teams guy in September, one in October, and one in November has already passed, Tim Priester. It seemed like that was the way his coaches were going for a little while. I got three guys. I'll split them up by four games and go from there. The NCAA doing something just absolutely smart. The 5-for-5 rule is fantastic. And they grandfathered in a guy like Charles Jogisa, who can choose the old, I need 2 years of eligibility for my two injuries. That's that's remarkable to them.
And Freeman credit Charlie Baker, the president of the NCAA, or the head of the NCAA, has tried to, you know, I think we're probably as far along in the conversations that with Congress and everything, it has a lot to do with Charlie Baker bringing that along, but it's just such a monstrous task and it takes a long time to get it done.
There's a couple of related questions, Tim, about last year. You referenced the 0-2 start, having faith in Chris Ash, but what difference there is for Chris Ash year two. And I thought it was interesting that he did double down. Like, he's like, you guys asked me what's wrong. If I thought it was schematic, if I thought it was the coordinator, I'd have changed the scheme, I'd have changed the coordinator. I didn't believe that. We just had to coach better. And people always say you got to coach better, and it drove people crazy for 15 years here. In this case, they had to coach better, but it was not changing out Chris Ash and Marcus Freeman making a sweeping change.
Yeah, he believed it. And, you know, every coach is in a situation where they can't always tell the 100% truth, but you know, when you give up a long pass play along the sideline that should have been tackled well before midfield, let alone however many 80 yards it was, you know, coach is going to look at that and say, well, that's not scheme. That's just a couple DBs, not Christian Gray and Jalen Stroman, right? Those were the two biggest culprits that just didn't follow through with it. But yeah, in that instance, he certainly was telling the truth.
I think he was referencing Northern Illinois here, but it just as easily could have been A&M when he said, you don't really know if you have an answer for your football team after a loss until the next week when you play a football game, but you have to believe all week that you have the answer. Your answer is you have to believe that is the answer. That is interesting way to lead the Notre Dame football program or anything else, to have that much faith. Like, all right, I got 7 days to write this ship. This is my answer. I am relying on this answer. We'll find out when the bullets go live and get back out there and play football.
Yeah. And Freeman is, you know, Freeman is, the glass is always half full, and whatever hand you deal him, and he talked about this, whatever hand you deal him, he is going to say, okay, how am I going to make the best of that? And I think that is a cornerstone of the success that he's had the last 2 years. He did. And the point I'm trying to make is, okay, the season ended in tragic fashion. But boy, did they have a long offseason. They had 8 straight weeks of winter conditioning. They benefited by that.
Surgeries were done.
Yeah. You know, it's Marcus Freeman finding the silver lining, and not only finding the silver lining, but convincing his players that, okay, man, this is what we were dealt. Now we're going to make the best of the situation.
I asked Marcus about the What I viewed last December, when we all do our lists, Notre Dame needs a defensive tackle or two of them, they need a backup, blah, blah, blah. Nobody said they need more corners. No one said they need more corners. And at some point, he signed, and when I said the word signed, he nodded his head. You signed your backup players to higher deals. Then all of a sudden, you went out and got two guys that started in college football, and you have sophomores thinking to themselves, what the hell just happened? And that's just the way competition goes for Marcus Freeman.
Right. And then he also knows, I'm giving him a lot of credit here today, but he knows the proper messaging.
It's July. You give all the credit you need to.
Yeah, he knows the messaging. So we're talking about Mark Zachary and Dallas Golden to a large extent as the backup corners.
I didn't reference them because then.
No, right. But Golden's a nickel. But, you know, he said, well, what you try to tell them is it doesn't mean bringing him in necessarily to play over you. You can win the job in the preseason. And so that, you know, that's all part of what Marcus Freeman does extremely well. How that sat with Mark Zachary and Dallas Golden, Zachary in particular, because he's a corner, you know, I mean, players are players. They're not going to like it.
I mean, it affected Golden. They moved the starting field corner to starting nickel right in front of Golden. Right. Golden was looking at Christian Gray, me, and Leonard Moore. Now all of a sudden it was three more names plus Jaden Sanders. That adds up.
Exactly. And if you're a backup and somebody, you know, a transfer comes in and wins the job, you're still getting paid. Still getting paid.
That does help too.
That's a huge difference in recent years.
It really is. He mentioned you asked him, I'll have you recant it. You asked him about his comments about that he could possibly retire as Notre Dame's coach. And I didn't really thought about this way, that like, you know, because I think of that a little bit as that's the good thing to say, but he couldn't even have said that a couple years ago. You have to have a little bit level of success yet.
Yeah, that's what I brought up. I said, you probably didn't want to, like, after, what are you going to do? After 2 years, you're going to say, well, you know, I want to coach here my whole life. And fan base says, well, we'll determine whether you coach here your whole life.
After the Clemson game in November of 23, right. I'll be a lifelong coach here.
Exactly. So he wasn't so presumptuous as to say that then. And has he said before? I mean, he said I was wrong in that he has said before that he would, you know, retiring from Notre Dame would be something he'd be interested in. I just haven't heard it to the magnitude. I know there's been a couple outlets, you know, that he has spoken to where I've seen the clip where he said retiring from Notre Dame would be, you know, would be a great thing, would be an honor for him to do.
Yeah, I thought he answered it well, because then at some point he's like, I want to stay as long as I can, as long as I want to stay here. I was like, well, that's not exactly right. Saying you're going to retire here either, but that is, I mean, that's how it works. He did say, though, like, he used to listen to other people a little bit more about what he can do with his coaching career outside of Notre Dame. And I think he learned a little this offseason about wanting to be at Notre Dame. Don't say the word retire again, because look, man, he can be as honest as he wants, but the guy's 40. He's not going to coach at Notre Dame until he's 60. So he's going to coach somewhere else someday. It's just as Notre Dame wants two national titles out of it before he does that. Right.
And I really do. He brought up, you know, he's comfortable with us, but he goes on this, you know, preseason media tour and was asked, I'm not going to say who, because this came after our interview was done, but, you know, one prominent member of the media asked him, well, are you going to win? You going to win? Was you going to go 12-0? Or are you going to win? How many games are you going to win? Yeah. And, you know, he's Marcus Freeman. I think we're good, and I think we're going to win all 12 games. But
I mean, Bob Davie should say that, too.
Yeah.
After Marcus Freeman, you're the head coach of a football team. How many games are you going to win? I don't know, seven.
Like, but he found the question uncomfortable and peculiar, and it came from a national name. Maybe down the road we'll say the name. I just don't think it's fair right now to say the name.
No, plus it's off the record. I asked the question about reclassifying, because 2 years ago it seems ridiculous that Notre Dame has a guy skipping his senior year of school coming into play. But if you look at it from our 35,000 feet, Teddy Girard will have all the support humanly possible on campus. He has planned to do this for a little while now. He will be at Notre Dame as what should be a high school senior, and he may end up playing football for Notre Dame this year. In the future, very, very near future, they're going to have reclassifying kids that would be going into their second semester of junior year coming to Notre Dame. And I want to know from Freeman, how is this even humanly possible?
I don't know how that is.
It's happening.
I mean, that's... Well, but we don't know of anyone yet. But
well, we couldn't talk to him about it anyway. But he talked.
You're probably
midway through. Yeah,
it's probably true. Like anything, it's like I was, you know, Texas Tech spent $40 million. Well, in 3 years, they're going to be spending $80 million. So I mean, it's just everything's going to escalate, including a second semester high school junior enrolling to play football.
I think it's planned for next year at Notre Dame. And my point was, how does this work? And he said, it works because we have conversations with them. Is this better for you? You could have a conversation with a kid that should be on your, I'll say should be, I'll use Leonard Moore. Let's say they had a conversation with Leonard Moore, the incoming freshman of 2024. Hey man, you might be able to win a spot opposite Benjamin Morrison. And Leonard Moore, you know, I want to finish my second semester senior year with my high school class. Okay, great. And then Leonard Moore went out and was the best player that they brought in that summer as a freshman, maybe other than Kingston Viliamuasa. And Marcus Freeman said, I have a list of guys that come in and can beat out anybody that enrolls early. They can beat out guys that reclassify guys can beat out them. It's everyone's personal journey. It's incredible to me, though, that college football is going in this direction still. Reclassification.
It really is. And you've talked many times about, you know, the guys that haven't come in early at Notre Dame that have been very successful, as you just mentioned. But, you know, he even tells the players and the prospects and the parents, don't make a decision based upon, oh, if I come in early, I'm going to play early, because that's not necessarily true.
No, and it's proven not to be, really. I mean, he said he had a list. I can tell you the list. You got Leonard Moore, you got Joe Alt, you got Kyle Hamilton, you got Michael Mayer, you got Benjamin Morrison. Those are all the best players of the last 5 years. I just might have named
well,
the best five players.
I think a guy named Ian Premer might add his name to the list. Marcus Freeman does such a great job of living in the moment, and he gave examples of that. Like, you know, when BK decided to leave, he knew he had options. He didn't necessarily, before BK decided to leave, BK's going to leave and I'm going to be named head coach. He lives in the moment. He's defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, and he has to do a great job in that moment. And
well, he used the great example, because speaking of September, Marcus Freeman as a defensive coordinator almost had the worst loss of all of them. He goes, I'm the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. I'm not thinking about replacing Brian Kelly. I'm thinking about how to stop Toledo, and I almost didn't.
Right.
That's exactly. Add Toledo to this list, Tim, of September, if Daquan Finn kneels down and they beat Notre Dame. That's it.
No doubt.
You're ready to bet against the spread in the September.
Thank you, Jack Cohn. It's one of the reasons why we wanted Jack Cohn to be around one more season, and should have been. If Charlie Baker had been the president, then he might have got another year at Notre Dame.
He was asked about championship expectations, and of course, I think that's the natural. Well, we always have championship expectations, but it is a little, you've written about this. It's a lot different this year. It is. Notre Dame players and coaches can't talk about the schedule, but it's baked in. It's baked into championship expectations. They might be the best team in the country, but if they had to play Texas in September, Georgia in October, and Alabama in November, we might not be saying they're guaranteed a playoff spot either. That is just part of it. And I think he's learned that it's time to just embrace these championship expectations.
Yeah, I mean, I think all things, and that was a part of a question I was going to ask and didn't, but I mean, I think all things being equal, he would rather that the expectations are like that, because that means you're a really real quality football team. So, I mean, henceforth, now 2027, then the transition they have to go in certain areas, you know, may dictate otherwise. But henceforth, particularly if they follow through with a real quality season, not necessarily winning the national title, but having a great season and making a run through the playoffs, that will be the expectation for Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman moving forward, as it should be.
The last thing I have, Tim, and then I'll leave it to you after this, is he said this of CJ Card. I think the fans will enjoy it. He has traits that I wish I had. To hear Freeman say that about CJ Card is a pretty cool comment for a true junior quarterback.
Yeah.
Sophomore quarterback, whatever you want to call him.
No, CJ Card is on a different level, just a completely different level. There is a topic that was brought up about gambling in college sports, and he said that they have compliance monitors and checks and balances to make sure that the players aren't doing that.
Yeah, to make sure the apps aren't being downloaded or aren't being
offended. Right.
You kind of have to. I mean,
which is, you know, I mean, it's kind of a police state within a college football program. But what are you going to do? You have to do it. You do it for the benefit of your program. You do it for the benefit of your team. You do it for the benefit of each individual player. So I didn't expect him to say, yeah, we monitor all that. I guess I should have, but that's a great thing too.
You know how you said it's easy to sell Notre Dame, a little bit easier to sell Notre Dame when they've seen the 2024 success and seen Marcus Freeman.
Right.
It's pretty easy to sell this. We want to monitor your apps when Brendan Sorsby lost his college career.
Well, true. It was such a public flogging that I'm sure every college football player and athlete is aware of it.
That was fun, Tim Priester. I'm glad we got to talk to Marcus Freeman just before. We will talk to Marcus Freeman again August 4th. But we have plenty before that, because we expect our Thursday podcast here coming up in 2 days to be pretty question heavy. After people read our stories on Freeman, at that point, we will post a transcript of Freeman as well. And I want to, of course, let everybody know other sites will have different questions. So when you say, how come nobody mentioned this? It's because we weren't there, just like they weren't there for our questions either.
Are we sharing transcripts?
Yeah, I'm sure we can do it. I've got a few phone calls coming in right now. Maybe that's what they're asking about right here. If we do, we have to have a moratorium, because we actually had a moratorium here for no posting on social media, but we're hitting 5 o'clock. So Jack Freeman, right, as soon as this podcast goes up, you can celebrate your birthday. Thank you for joining us on your birthday. Of course, he is, what you'd say, Jack, 58, right?
Yeah.
And Jack Freeman's birthday.
And I'm 56.
You're 56, right? Yep. For Jack Freeman's birthday. Yes. And Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated. I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening. A special edition of Irish Illustrated Insider.